KSCU Santa Clara presents Robots Attack. Movies, TV, video games, comic books, tech stuff, news, music. If it is geek, it's on Robots Attack. Participate in the show by commenting on Facebook, tweeting them at Robots Attack Me, emailing the show robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Now, Robots Attack.
All right, welcome to Robots Attack, the one and only Geek Central talk show here on KSCU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, the underground sound. I am Joe, and with me, of course, is...
Caleb.
And...
I'm Jason.
All right.
That's right. We are here to rock your geek world.
Woo!
All right. Let's see. I don't know how to turn that down. Me this.
There we go.
Hey,
all right, sweet. This is exciting. This is,
less phone call noises on the air. Always better.
Yeah, hopefully. Mm-hmm. Hopefully the...
And I'm turning down my cell phone right now.
Yeah, always a good thing to remember. Anyway, like I said, we are the one and only Geek Central talk show here on KSCU Santa Clara. And I am Joe. And we have Caleb and Jason. And what we like to do at the beginning of the show is talk about new releases.
Yes. We'll get things rolling with the things that you might be wanting to see.
Yes. Speaking of things that you might want to see in the theater, we have the Lego Movie. An ordinary Lego minifigure mistakenly thought to be the extraordinary Master Builder is recruited to join a quest to stop an evil Lego tyrant from gluing the universe together.
Is it anything like a Master Chief?
I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Ooh.
I know Batman is in the Lego Movie, so...
Wow.
Maybe.
So is Abraham Lincoln.
What isn't Abraham Lincoln in? Speaking of things that he may or may not be in, number two is The Monuments Men, based on the true story of the greatest treasure hunt in history. The Monuments Men focus on an unlikely World War II platoon tasked by FDR to go into Germany, rescue artistic masterpieces from Nazi thieves, and return them to their rightful owners. If you're not a fan of World War II stuff, maybe you're a fan of vampires. So there's Vampire Academy. Rose Hathaway is a dampier, half-human vampire, guardians of the Mori, peaceful, mortal vampires living discreetly within our world. Her legacy is to protect those people from bloodthirsty immortal vampires, the Stygoi. This is her story.
Wow.
Mortal, there you go.
Mortal vampires? That just seems to defeat the point. But maybe that's just me. I don't understand.
I don't know. Maybe if we read the book series that I think it's based on.
You know, yeah, there is that. So if the theatre does not thrill you, perhaps your DVD and Blu-ray collection could use a little sprucing. Maybe the Banshee chapter on DVD, a fictional film based on the real experiments run by the CIA using mind-altering chemicals. Or perhaps you want something a little more highbrow. Perhaps the Dallas Buyers Club on Blu-ray and DVD, based on the real-life drama of a Texas man who finds himself at odds with U.S. pharmaceutical companies and the U.S. government. So, in the grand American tradition, takes matters into his own hands and collects alternative medicines through all available means. He also obtains supplies for his HIV for other HIV-positive people in his community. And then there is also Doctor Who, the complete sixth season on Blu-ray and DVD. The set combines the two parts of the season into one glorious collection with hours of bonus material. If you just can't get enough of your Doctor. Then there is The Escape Plan on Blu-ray and DVD. A pair of 80s action movie legends combine their talents in this epic prison break film. Then there's Free Birds on Blu-ray and DVD. A pair of turkeys, large birds, not anything else, decide to take turkey off the Thanksgiving menu by going back in time to change history.
Whoa. I wonder if Free Bird is in that movie.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Thank goodness it's just a cartoon. if turkeys had the ability to time travel, we'd all be cooked.
Oh,
nice. That's it for a Blu-ray and DVD.
Oh man, I was hoping for some more turkey buns. Maybe there's one in the PSA.
Let's check. The Museum of American Heritage presents Television, a History, an exhibit displaying a variety of unique 1940s and 1950s era television sets.
I don't think there's any turkey puns in this.
No, I'll get it in here somewhere.
Okay.
Television sets from the museum's collection. The exhibit explores everything from how the television works to its social impacts on turkeys. The exhibit opens September 27th, 2013, and runs until March 23rd, 2014. And regular exhibit hours are from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, unless otherwise noted. The museum is located at 351 Homer Avenue in Palo Alto, and admission is free.
Something seemed foul in that reading.
That's not bad. I'll get you that one. Yes. It was in there.
Man, you're fired.
I definitely can't complain.
All right, moving from Blu-rays and DVDs and things of discs to another forms of discs and not discs, depending upon how you get them.
To disc or not to disc?
That is the question in this era. It is an actual honest-to-goodness question for some. Anyway, video games. We have Fable Anniversary for the 360, the full HD definitive Fable experience. Fable Anniversary includes all new Xbox 360 exclusive content, including achievements, the lost chapters, and Xbox Smart Glass integration.
Huh.
Then we have Outlast for the PS4. It's already on the PC, but it's coming to the PS4 this month. For free, if you have the PlayStation Plus, investigate the inside of Mount Massive Asylum and live to uncover the mystery. Ooh. We have Dust Force for the PlayStation 3, Vita, and PC. In Dust Force, players stylishly flow through precarious environments, sweeping up dust, leaves, trash, and slime. The cleaners face off against the four sprites who are determined to make the mess of the whole world. Then we have The Wolf Among Us, Episode 2, Smoke and Mirrors. Yes. For 360, PC, and PS3. We also have Surge Deluxe for the Vita, the block-matching puzzle game that promises to electrify your fingertips with lightning-fast gameplay, unique mechanics, and strategic depth. Then we have... I had to put this on here because it sounds insane.
Okay.
Okay.
Dominic Pebble Moose.
Okay.
For the PC, iPhone, and iPad... It's a unique and offbeat stop-motion musical detective adventure game about gender and the economy, featuring a minimalist point-and-tap interface, artwork made of clay, cardboard, and love, a soundtrack of wacky brass music, a cast of odd characters who aren't quite who they seem, people frequently bursting into song.
Okay, okay. That is quite the...
Yeah.
Every time I've made artwork out of love, it's been not so well received. But
that's depressing.
I know.
That's unfortunate. And things that are slightly more fortunate is possibly in your pull list. From DC, you might consider Movement Number 9, Batgirl comes to Coral City, tracking down a metahuman who is trying to join the movement, written by Gail Simone with art by Freddie Williams. A listener recommends Earth 2 Annual. Said that we
have listeners.
Yes.
Yes. All right.
They're making recommendations.
Woo! I like it.
Who are these people? Get out of here.
They're not even in here. Anyways, Loki from across the town over at Marvel comes Loki, Agent of Asgard, number one. Loki is a one-man secret service, and he's prepared to do what it takes to get the job done, even if it means breaking into Avengers Tower.
Ooh.
Oh, who are we kidding? He'd do that just for giggles. It's written by Al Ewing and Lee, with art by Lee Garbett. Also, is Ms. Marvel number one, an ordinary girl from Jersey City, suddenly becomes extraordinary when she is given the powers of Ms. Marvel. Whoa. Written by C. Willow Wilson, with art by Adrian Alfonso.
I'm psyched about that in a lot of different ways. But, yeah, I'm not sure the execution came together in my favorite way.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So you just ruined one of Caleb's recommendations.
It's not it, different people.
It's
different,
weird.
Different interpretations.
That's all I'm saying. It's weird. It's got a lot of cool ideas, but it's weird.
From DC and Marvel aren't your particular cup of tea, perhaps Image's Apocalypse Owl, number one. Allison Carter is about keeping the world from ending day in and day out, but her latest assignment could be her last.
Oh.
This is the first in a four-issue miniseries written by J. Michael Straczynski and with art by Sid Cortain. Then there's Lobster Johnson, Get Lobster, number one, from Dark Horse.
That one's not weird at all.
Nope.
When a ref is killed live by a pair of seemingly mad and bulletproof wrestlers, who can be the source of this? I don't write it. I just make.
Like
I'll make
I
it
said,
up.
Not weird at all.
This
fits perfectly into my world.
Story is written by John Acrudi and Mike Mignola with art by Tonchi Zonjic. I apologize to you in advance, or in retrospect. Judge Dredd, Mega City 2, number 2 of 5, and is from IDW. Dredd is going undercover with a motorcycle gang of bloodthirsty artists.
Whoa!
Things are very different.
I told you this one was different.
Things are very different in Mega City 2. This one's written by Douglas Walk with art by Ulysses Farnes. No.
One can only hope.
Time traveling with the turkeys?
Time traveling.
To write comics?
Or zombie artistic Ulysses.
There you go.
Then there's
Randing. Depending on which Ulysses, that could be even. anyway.
Just don't hit him in the heel. wait, now it's somebody else. Then there's Grimm.
It's close enough.
Grimm the Warlock from Dynamite/Dynamic Forces. It's based on the NBC show. International tensions are up as a murder during Chinese New Year sparks questions. Can Nick keep his secret of being a Grimm away from his partner and still solve the crime?
He's still keeping that from his partner? Yeah. How long has it been?
Man. Well, at least in the comic.
Oh, okay.
The comic is
spoilers.
Parallel to the show, but
they're
not exactly
dead.
The same.
Oh, okay. maybe. I don't know.
Man, they're not. Like, maybe it takes place during, like, in between the season or something.
I'm only as far as Amazon has allowed me to be, so I'm not caught up.
Well, one day you'll be sort of, maybe.
On the same grim page.
All right, moving on to the last segment of our new releases, the music. This is where I get to butcher a bunch of names. So I apologize in advance.
There you go.
All right, we've got After the Disco from Broken Bells. The second full-length album for the duo of James Mercer and Brian Burton follows the release of a short film with Kate Mara as an astronaut and Anton Yelchin as her lover, Oliver. Then we have Moon from Snowbird, the debut collaborative release from Stephanie Dolson and...
Bruce.
Some twins, all right? It was supported by Philip Selway and Ed O'Brien of Radiohead, Eric Pulido and Mackenzie Smith of Midlake, Lanterns on the Lakes, Paul Gregory and Jonathan Wilson. Then we have So Long, See You Tomorrow from Bombay Bicycle Club, produced by lead singer Jack Steadman. The fourth release for the indie band was written while traveling in Asia and Europe. Then we have Along the Way from Mark McGuire.
Not the baseball star?
Probably not.
Okay.
This is the third full-length solo release for the former Emeralds guitarist.
Yeah,
I don't know,
probably.
Maybe Moonlighted, you know, after...
Yeah, I don't know.
He and Sammy Sosa got a band together or something.
It makes sense.
It's true. And then last, we have Dead from the Young Fathers. This is the second full-length studio release for the Edinburgh-based hip-hop trio of... Aliosis, Masaqui, K.S. Bankole, and Graham Hastings.
Nailed it.
Yeah, who knows. But something I do know we're going to nail is this show.
Yes.
We got a great show for you tonight. In the core, we're going to talk about game mechanics. I know it sounds maybe a little weird, but we're going to talk about the things we like about games that we play. You know,
oh, okay. So I was just going to talk about Isaac Clarke the entire.
That's fine.
You could do that if you so desire.
I can always turn your mic off, so it works.
Game mechanic. I get it.
It's true.
Mm-hmm.
I'm full of them tonight.
I was going to talk about Nick Ramos on that note,
Mm-hmm.
Mechanic from Dead Rising 3. There you go.
Right in there.
You'll have to think of a mechanic off the top of your head.
Scooter from Borderlands.
There you go. See, trifecta. We've got it set. All
catch
right.
a ride.
So, yeah, we're going to talk about game mechanics.
But not those in particular the core. Ones.
Or maybe. Maybe. We'll throw it off. You'll have to wait and see. That's the thing. Stick around and find out. You'll have to wait and listen.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you can't see us unless you come to the station and
stand
up,
outside
the
window.
Right out
the
really,
window.
Really creepy.
Yeah, and stare at us, and that would be really weird.
Which
so.
We encourage you to do. I mean,
no, no.
We don't have enough creepy yeah. people.
What we'd actually encourage you to do
is interact with is us.
Exactly.
And if you can do that on Facebook, you can do a search for Robots Attack, two words, or and that will bring you to our page, or you can go to Twitter. Our handle is Robots Attack Me, all one word. And then finally, you can find us on ye olde email at robotsattackshow@gmail.com. And finally, if you want one place to rule them all, one place to find everything that we are talking about, robotsattack.me. It will bind it all into one place under one address. There's a button that says interact, and that will take you to even our Google Plus page. Mm-hmm. And there's a form on the website. If you want to send us an email through that, comments on our archive episodes, it's all there.
Yes, we love it when you participate.
Mm-hmm.
We love it to bind you to our show.
Yes.
Right. It's even better than tapping on the glass.
It's true.
It is.
It's very
considerably
true.
Better.
So yeah, and of course, we've got another installment of Caleb's Corner.
Yes.
About the
Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah, and tonight I'm going to be talking about Drax the Destroyer.
We'll see if he actually does destroy things or if that's a false name. Sort of like Little John wasn't mm-hmm. really little.
Yeah, it's true.
But you'll have to tune in to find out.
Right.
I made that up on the spot. But stick around, it might actually be true.
Yeah.
And of course Geek Talk, and we always do the news. But before all of that, we've got another PSA.
Do you want to listen to KSU even when you are not near a radio?
Yes. Do I?
Stream us whenever you want at www.kscu.org or on the TuneIn Radio app or website. And never be without the underground sound.
Tip for when you do that, search for our call letters, KSCU, not our frequency number, because there's a lot of those across the United States.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Good tip. All right, let's get to some music before we get to the news. I'm going to play a track from the new Dumb Dumb Girls album, Too True. The track is Are You Okay? Let us know if you're okay.
Yeah.
All right, you're listening to Robots Attack, the one and only Geek Center talk show here on KSU Santa Clara 103.3 FM, the underground sound.
News.
That's right. Welcome back to Robots Attack. We're in the news, and Caleb has our first story.
That's right. Throwing the link up right now on Facebook and Twitter. And this first story is about Netflix, which is a common topic on the show, but in this particular case, their Q4 earnings for 2013 have the information has come out, and they are pulling in almost as much revenue as HBO.
They're now, killing it.
They're doing a good job. Netflix's quarterly earnings were $1.2 billion, which is up 24% from last year.
That's a lot.
It is a lot of money. HBO's Q4 was $1.3 billion. Those are both billion with a B, and which is only up 6% over last year. The parent company of HBO, Time Warner, when they did their earnings call this most recently, this is the first time that when the investors actually heard the revenue of HBO broken out separately from Time Warner as a entire company. Mm-hmm. And there's some speculation this is because they're kind of feeling the heat of Netflix breathing down their necks.
Mm. Makes sense. Because Netflix is hot. Am I right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's red.
I know I'm right.
Usually red is associated with hot.
Mm-hmm. It's true. I think it's kind of a cool red, artistically speaking.
Yeah.
But
chromatically, yeah, it tends towards that. But
and we just lost half of our audience.
No, art geeks are bread and butter. So
that's the other half that's stayed. Yeah.
The one thing that HBO does have over Netflix right now is their actual profit margin is higher than Netflix. The profits for HBO were $413 million, which is a 33% margin, and Netflix was $82.3 million, which is only 7% margin. So they're, you know, after it all said and out, like, there's not quite comparable just yet, but I suspect that's because Netflix is spending more money on generating content right now with, like, they have, like, what, 6-7 new, like, original shows that they just did this past year.
Yeah.
They're
making shows is the new big thing. Everybody's doing it.
They get, mm-hmm. they had those, I reported a while back, the Marvel shows that mm-hmm. they're doing.
Yeah, and I'm sure, like, they're kind of doing what the Amazon model of reinvesting most of their profits back into the company to improve the company. So there's that. But yeah, I just thought this was really interesting that they actually separated HBO out, because HBO is now starting to, since they are kind of getting more competition from Netflix, and Netflix has openly said that HBO is their primary target and a lot of this stuff, that Time Warner's kind of going, okay, maybe we should do something about that. It's like, yeah, so this little upstart Netflix, they're not so little and not so upstarty anymore.
Yeah.
So that's very exciting for the world of digital streaming and new and content where you want it when you want it, kind of thing.
That's true.
Yeah, they, in a way, like, they lucked out with the name of their company.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Like, you know, it started out with DVDs, but when they turned to streaming, it's like, it still fits.
Yeah.
Like,
mm-hmm.
You know,
it's relevant now.
Yeah.
They don't have to rebrand themselves after, They picked a good name to start with. So.
Yeah, it makes me wonder, like, how much of that was planning versus just completely dumb luck, but
I suspect it was a hedge bet that that's where it would go, but the fact that it's gone as well as it has been sort of a yes, we chose wisely sort of situation. But there you go.
I'm happy for him.
I like to think it was a person on the toilet, mm-hmm. and they're like, I got it, and they ran out of the office.
I like that too.
Yeah. I got the name.
It's pretty good.
Scribble on the board, run back, right back into the toilet.
Yeah.
Right. Run awkwardly.
Yeah.
Back as they're pulling up their pants. Maybe not. We go from different ways of conveying movies and TV series to a possible TV series coming up, because it's being written by Seth Rogen, of all people.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not sure I'm a huge fan of Seth Rogen's writing. I think he's pretty funny and he's a pretty decent actor. But I'm particularly ambivalent about him being the writer for this.
Uh-oh.
The Preacher TV series.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
I heard Preacher.
Apparently everybody who's read any of his samples is going nuts about it. But
oh, okay.
But yeah, Green Hornet is still very fresh in my mind. So
yeah. It was weird when I heard it, because it's going to be on AMC.
Right.
It was like, I've only read the first trade, I think. I was like,
mm-hmm. uh-huh.
Like, this would fit a little better on HBO, but it'll be curious to see how they...
It's going to be a pretty tough sell, because it's an interesting show. It's an interesting comic. Garth Ennis is not a person to mince... or shy away from challenging subjects, let's put it that way.
Yeah. I mean, they are doing Constantine on regular network, so...
That's true, yeah. And apparently Ennis himself has said that he's impressed with the writing so far, so...
That's cool.
Okay, well...
Very afraid.
Yeah, I mean, they've done at least in my opinion, a good job with Walking Dead, so...
Yeah, AMC has done some really amazing things, considering... what AMC was before those amazing things came up. So
yeah, which one does Justified again?
Oh, that's FX.
FX. Okay, I'm sorry. Yep. So That's what I get for not having cable TV.
You're fired again.
Oh.
So moving from things that were going to be a TV show to movie news.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, I did a story a little while back about Michael Douglas being the original Ant-Man.
Awesome.
Yeah.
No.
Ant-Man, right? Okay. Well, I've got some more Ant-Man news for you.
Nice.
I
think I heard a little about this. I'm excited.
Yeah. Well, okay. I'm interested
you
about the others.
Like Douglas?
Well, I'm interested about this, but this like piques my interest more about Ant-Man.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not about a man. It's about a woman.
Oh, go on.
And what a woman. If you're familiar with the TV series Lost.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you're familiar with the latest Hobbit, Desolation of Smaug, or Smaug, however you want to, jump on it.
I'm excited now.
Well, Benedict Cumberbatch is going to play a woman.
Wait.
He's going to be...
In his most daring role to date. I don't remember him in Lost.
Oh, he's there.
He was the voice of the Dharma.
And the smoke.
That's true. He did a lot of clicks and whistles.
Yep, that was all Cumberbatch.
Cumberbatch.
He Benedicted that all the way to Cumberbatch.
Right.
But yes, Evangeline Lilly is up for Marvel's Ant-Man.
Wait, what?
Threw a little curveball at you. I know you were getting excited for the Cumberbatch, but I tricked you. The Hobbit and Lost star Evangeline Lilly is reportedly joining the Marvel Universe. Lilly is in early talks to play the female lead in director Edgar Wright's Ant-Man. If a deal is made, Lilly would join stars Paul Rudd and Michael Douglas. Quote, it is unclear who Lilly would be playing, though some insiders say she would play Pym's daughter and Lang's love interest, according to Variety. Pym didn't have a daughter in the comics, but...
Yeah, that's going to be interesting.
Ant-Man screenwriters Joe Cornish and Wright could certainly have switched things up in their version by giving him one.
Mm.
Ant-Man begins filming this April for a July 17th, 2015 release.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know anything about Cornish, but I trust Wright so far, so I'm...
I heard rumors that this is just pure speculation that
from who?
Put on your speculation hat.
She would be she'd be playing Janet Van Dyne and be the Wasp. And okay. I could totally see her rocking the pixie haircut for that.
Yeah, that would be kind of cute. I won't lie.
So I think Ant-Man was pretty low on my radar, but it's starting to get more and
more interesting.
So,
yeah. All it had going for it for me was having Wright on the billing.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting better.
Yeah. I think Ant-Man's one of those weird situations where, like, if they play their cards right, it will, like, totally surprise everyone. So,
well, it seems like a lot of people are pretty passionate about Ant-Man, and that's what's thrown me off to this point, is there's been a lot of people that are really on top of every single story that comes out, and before, like, things like this that would appeal more to a mass audience came out, people were, like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many people I've been hearing just stressing out about every little detail of this movie that I would have never guessed would be into Ant-Man, let alone like Marvel Comics at all. So I don't know if it's that character that people really identify with or the potential or what. Because honestly, it's always sounded dorky to me.
Oh, Ant-Man is pretty nerdy. He's one of the nerdiest heroes in the Marvel universe.
Is that what it comes down to? Is that why people are so?
I think what also appeals to the Ant-Man from the comics is that he's a really flawed human being. He's like, you know, the in the comics, his relationship with the Wasp is tumultuous, shall we say?
Oh, okay. I don't know how much of that is like from the original Marvel. I know he's not a nice person in the whatchamacallit?
In the Ultimates?
The Ultimate.
Historically he's pretty harsh in the old school Marvel as well. Okay. So it's kind of like Tony Stark's alcoholism. It's like it's this very humanizing element to him, even though it's not a very good thing. It still makes him interesting as a character. So it'll be interesting to see if they do anything with that in the in the movie, but it sounds like they're changing up a lot. So I don't think that will be quite the same scenario there.
Yeah. Okay.
We'll just have to wait and see. But something you don't have to wait and see about is the San Jose Animal Advocates. If you're an animal lover who wants to help homeless animals find their forever homes but have limited time to volunteer, you can join San Jose Animal Advocates, a local nonprofit that is building a community network to help find loving, foster, and forever homes for pets in our local shelters. With your help, we can save countless animals. All it takes is a few clicks, and you can share their stories with your network of friends. It's easy. Join them at sjanimaladvocates.org or look for them on Facebook.
I've heard that Cumberbatch is a fan of that, so everybody else should be.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me.
Mm-hmm. Very true. All right, so from...
No.
It's a good, you said it was a good thing, so that's very
true.
Oh,
okay, that's true. Okay.
Yeah. So the from movies to media acquisitions and interesting media change-ups, Amazon has acquired a game company.
I heard about this.
Yes, they have recently acquired Double Helix, and this has fed rumor that they might actually release a game console, and it sounds like they're getting ready to promote to get their own first party titles potentially in the pipeline.
People need to stop making consoles. I'm going to say it right now. There's too many.
Well, when people started realizing that you could run, that Android runs really well on relatively low-powered hardware.
I don't care.
They found that an inexpensive hardware, like, oh, we can do something with
Make
that.
Make it stop. I already have a phone. Runs Android.
Yeah, so there is already an Amazon Game Studios, but they haven't been... And they've been focusing mostly on... mobile games and haven't really done much like super big. They have like,
what's their biggest mobile game?
They had the social games. Well, I'd have to look. They had a thing they called Living Classics, which was, I think, where they like revive like old school arcade games and stuff like that, or old.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah. I'd have to go verify that. I don't have that particular bit in front of me.
So you completely made that up is what you're saying?
No, they mentioned the Living Classics here, but I don't know precisely what that means.
Okay.
But what's interesting about Double Helix is that by acquiring them, they didn't just get the talent, which is the developers and art teams. They also got all the IP or intellectual property. So that means that they have Earthworm Jim, Enter the Matrix, Indiana Jones and the Emperor's Tomb, and Buffy the Vampire Slayer, as well as which come from the respective companies of Shiny and the collection, which were combined to make Double Helix. And then there's titles that have been done by Double Helix itself, which is Silent Hill Homecoming and Front Mission Evolved and a couple others. And their next major title is Strider for the PS3. Huh. So it'll be interesting.
It's dropping on just about everything.
Okay. So there's that. I just thought this was really interesting. Like, huh, Amazon's doing all sorts of really interesting media plays right now. They got their Prime Instant Streaming, and then they got their original series, and now they're making even more games. It's like, huh, what is Bezos up to?
Yeah. Yeah, what made me wonder was they made the new Killer Instinct game.
That's right.
So I was wondering, like, what was going to happen with that, but Microsoft came out and said, don't worry about it. We handle that. We've got our people on it. Don't worry. It's not going away. So.
Yeah. Well, that's good to know as well. So that, although they're trading, then they're moving into another company, they're not dropping their titles. So that's good.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we go from dropping to being pushed out.
Oh.
Sort of. Perhaps you have heard or seen the massive barge being constructed by Google in the bay.
I remember mentioning that.
Yeah. I think we reported on that.
Okay. Apparently, it's been told to move. The San Francisco Bay Conservation and Development Commission gave it cease and desist orders.
Ooh.
So it's not like they have to deconstruct the entire thing. They have to move it someplace. And so apparently that's exactly what's going to happen. We know not where at this point. So we'll keep you informed.
Well, speaking of moving in a way, Sledgehammer Games developing 2014's Call of Duty release, which means the series is changing over / moving to a 3-year development cycle. So that's how I tried to segue into that.
Well done. Well done.
I try. This year's Call of Duty is in development at Sledgehammer Games. And let's be honest, Modern Warfare 3 was pretty much Sledgehammer with the leftover of Infinity Ward.
Yeah.
Not putting anyone down in that
they
statement.
They weren't trying to sell it that way initially, but yes.
Not putting down. It's just when most of your team from Infinity Ward leaves to Respawn or other places,
right,
someone had to fill that in, and exactly, that was pretty much Sledgehammer. Activision revealed that during its investors' earnings call today, quote, "For the first time, this year's Call of Duty game and future Call of Duty games are being built on a 3-year development cycle." The publisher also revealed, "There are several advantages to doing this. The first is, of course, quality. This will give our designers more time to envision and to innovate. This would put developer Treyarch's presumed next Call of Duty in a 2015 release window, with Infinity Ward following suit in 2016. There's that sort of means there might be a chance that Treyarch's version could possibly be just next-gen and PC.
Ooh.
Probably not,
right?
But because by then more people will have the newer systems.
That's true.
And I would be sorry for people who don't have the newer systems, but I'd be down for that, because that means the games are going to look better. They're going to take more advantage of the better systems, because they don't have to worry about the lower quote-unquote, the previous generation.
Yeah, and personally,
they don't
think
need old hardware.
They're the innovators of the group. So if anybody is going to be like the first completely next-gen game developer for that series, I think they're the right ones for it.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be curious to see what Sledgehammer does, since it'll be their first one their own.
Yeah, and Modern 3 was really solid. I can't put it down.
Yeah. Because, I mean, when I say it was like Sledgehammer Games, I mean, I think the base structure was already there. They just kind of came in and, you know, made it. So this is, I think, going to be their first, like, independent on their own, like,
their own development. Yeah.
So it'll be curious to see, you know, what they do to the series.
Yeah.
To make it different or add.
I have high hopes. I trust them.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, because you played a ton of Modern Warfare 3.
I played a little. Enough to be impressed. Let's put it that way.
What was your favorite gun?
You're fired.
I'm going to go with the one that came with the assault kit. whichever one that one
That
was.
Is the correct answer.
If you were playing Ghosts, because there is no assault kit in Modern Warfare 3.
Well, no, the they have the ones with assault rifles, machine gun, like and the pre-built kits.
We'll let you stop digging your own grave here.
I kid. Now, here's the real difficult part. Are you going to be able to segue from this to your next story?
Right.
Well, from high hopes to flying snakes. How about that?
I'll take that.
Okay.
I like flying snakes.
In
theory.
In theory, yeah.
They have potential. We'll have to wait and see.
Right. If there's one coming at me, I'm not I don't know.
Mm-hmm. So the
are they friendly snakes?
We'll have to wait and see. Or listen.
It depends. The
I'm too busy interrupting, though.
The Chrysophilia paradisi is a snake that can glide, and its usual mode of transportation is to climb up a tree about 50 meters or so, and then leap off of a branch and glide down to another branch a ways away.
I'm not sure leap is the term for a snake. I envision like legs being involved with leaping. Does it grow legs?
No, it sort of like wraps its half of itself around the thing and then sort of, I guess, fling.
It's like a springing.
I guess flinging would be a better description because it kind of like bends down and then throws its head up and semantics. Pulls itself away.
Okay.
So anyways, it launches itself from the tree.
Do I need to turn this mic on?
Yeah. Nah, I think we're okay for now. But what makes this particular leaping, launching, floating snake kind of unique is the fact that it doesn't just, you know, throw itself off a branch and like
every snake does that,
and into another tree. It actually will spread its rib cage to make its body a more aerodynamic shape.
I think I just vomited in my mouth a little bit.
And the and then, you know, it does sort of a momentum dive, and then it actually levels out into a glide, and then it does this weird, and it does a serpentine motion across through the air.
Oddly enough,
as it glides over to its destination, and it can even turn its turn while in mid glide and stuff like that. It is an amazing, amazing thing.
Amazing, amazing, creepy thing.
If you watch the we have the video up. There's a video on the Live Science website where I got the link, and it's just really cool. Its gliding ability is comparable to that of, say, a flying squirrel or other flying rodent or gliding animal.
Man, Rocky and Bullwinkle spinoff coming at you.
What makes this another thing that makes this interesting is because the snake changes its shape as it to improve its gliding ability. Mm-hmm. They say, well, you know, what does that look like? So they like modeled the shape and took it into a wind tunnel to see how it would react to, you know, being in a more constant airflow situation, and its body shape responds very much like the wing of an airplane to aerodynamically speaking. So it's just really fascinating that there's a creature that has a form of locomotion which is unique to it in such a way that it actually is like moving through the air like a modern device, despite the fact that it's probably very, very old.
I'm gonna make an airplane out of snakes and then put snakes on it.
Snakes.
That's my goal now.
Plane of snakes with snakes on the plane.
Right. And one of those snakes I'll make with a Bluetooth. Because the next story is talking about Bluetooth.
Okay, nice.
Yeah.
Smooth.
Okay, I'm not sure many of you have run across this problem. I have an older vehicle that still has a tape deck in it, and so it's still the best way to get audio through the stereo.
Yeah.
And so kind of the lousy thing about it is that you have a wire that's kind of snaked out of your tape deck. So it looks like your tape deck wants to constantly vomit or like it has a little tampon like thing on or something. But sorry, too far maybe.
Yeah. A bit maybe.
Anyway, somebody figured out how to make one of these things with no wires, and it involves, amazingly enough, the technology of Bluetooth.
Huh.
So yeah, a simple rechargeable Bluetooth thing that just pops into your cassette deck, and you have all of your songs off of your phone or whatnot Bluetooth-enabled device through your cassette deck, which I'm surprised nobody's come up with until now. But if you really want one, a company called Ion is finally selling one. So you can relive your 80s glory in fine Bluetooth quality.
I wonder if they were waiting for the Bluetooth, if Bluetooth LE was which is Bluetooth low energy, helped make that possible because it consumes a lot less power to make the
transition.
And there's not a lot of space in those devices for a battery.
Yeah, it recharges off of a micro USB, which everything does now. So
Thank that's kind of handy. European Union just decreed that all battery cell phones should have the same charger. Well, and I think that's been a boon for all of this stuff.
Didn't they just change it again, though? So isn't stuff going to end up switching again? Or is everybody going to stick with their old decree?
I hadn't heard about a new one. I remember them saying that everything needs to be standardized, and so they picked micro USB to do that with.
I'm fairly happy with it. The little springy things go bad a little bit too quick for me, but hey, nothing's perfect.
It's true.
Still doesn't help me, though, unfortunately. My device doesn't have Bluetooth, so...
Oh, okay.
I gotta stick with the wire.
We'll plug a little Bluetooth adapter into your device, and yeah.
I don't think my iPod has. I don't know.
I think that's when somebody's come.
It's probably
up
the one
with
for
it,
your
I'm
dock
sure.
connector. Anyways,
I don't think
it's Apple involved, he knows about something that can make it into Bluetooth. I guarantee.
I think mine's too old though for. It,
no,
so sadly,
it's not too old.
Sadly,
there's no way.
Sadly,
no.
I have to stick with the wire that you so eloquently described earlier.
The wire.
What? It's an app description.
All right. Is that going to do it for news?
I have a robot story.
Do it.
All righty.
I have no more stories about strings.
That's probably a good thing. But this is a robot story that will literally touch you. This guy has a... is the first person to have a prosthetic device that gives real feedback about the object being touched to his brain. It's not like, oh, it's a buzzing sensation. Like they actually wired electrodes to his nerves.
Mm.
And then, you know, attached him to a prosthetic hand, and he was able to manipulate the hand and then give accurate feedback about what he was holding. Is it a sphere? Is it a tube? Is it soft? Is it firm? You know,
we're getting to full-on Syndicate world. We're working towards it, and I think another 10 years, and we'll have it.
Yeah, we are moving leaps and bounds beyond what we thought we would be doing right now. This is, as of now, the first one that actually have this sort of success. Like a while back, we covered the monkey that can control a device with its mind.
Right.
And
there was a cat one a long time ago too. I think they've been stepping off of each other.
Mm-hmm. And now they've, but, and this one isn't so much about the controlling of the device as it is about the feedback from the device, which is another new aspect. And if you can start bringing all these technologies together, the mind control movement of natural motion with the feedback of touch, then having, you know, prosthetic hands that accidentally crush things becomes a lot less of an issue. You can tell the difference between grabbing an egg, grabbing a grape, and grabbing a baseball. So it's like, and that's going to do amazing wonders for people, like, you know, that.
Yeah.
So. It's really cool. The actual prosthesis looks a little bit weird at the moment. It looks like it's got frog fingers or something.
Yeah.
But
it's
other than that, other than the style, the points that I'm taking off for style, I'd still give it like a 9 out of 10.
Yeah, it's
kind of cool.
It's a functioning prototype. So it's like it's like basically. It functions good. Now that they've proven it can work, their goal is to how to make it more human scale, because like right now it's about like 1.5. Like it's like, you know, it's much bigger.
It's a little big,
much bigger than the human hand. So, but like
it's not as big as Ms. Marvel's hands.
Well, that depends. the thing that like. And like the touch is actually really sensitive. Like he could blindfold himself and put earplugs in. So like he's essentially cut off from whatever they're gonna put in his hand in the robotic hand, and he could tell them, like this is a ball, this is a cylinder, this is hard, this is soft. And
nice.
The thing that I didn't hear about, do you know what sort of time frame was involved? Was it just like they stuck jumper cables onto the neurons and then it was all ready to go? Or was it a long training process?
They had to do surgery to attach the electrodes to his nerves.
Uh-huh.
And then there was a training process. So it wasn't like instant. But they proved it can work and that it does work. So now it's like, now that we have the concepts, we can start refining. And
then they can start red boxing them.
we're still probably a few steps away from the red box of prosthetic touch sensitive devices, but we're probably getting that much closer. Soon they will be at the hospital, perhaps.
Only at red boxes at hospitals. Which is slightly in bad taste, I just realized. So maybe.
Yeah, maybe that's why.
Maybe the blue box?
That.
No, that's taken by other doctors. I didn't even mean it that way. I meant seriously. But anyway.
Anyway, if you want to see the videos and the rest of the stories that we talked about tonight,
you can go to our Facebook page. You do a search for Robots Attack, two words, and you'll find our page. Or you can find us on Twitter. Our handle is Robots Attack Me, all one word. And then there's our own website, robotsattack.me, that will have links to our past episodes. But more importantly, it will have the Interact section, which has Facebook, Twitter, Google+, all of that good stuff, all in one handy package.
And even if you don't want to see any of the videos or the stuff that we were talking about, it's still there. I mean, it's good for you to know, at least.
Yeah.
Share with a friend.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, please do. All right, you're listening to Robots Attack here on KACU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, The Underground Sound. We're going to take a quick music break and then come back with Caleb's Corner. Want to tease the folks?
I'm doing a series to help inform you about Guardians of the Galaxy. And tonight, it's Drax the Destroyer.
Boom, boom, boom.
That's the raccoon, right?
No. We'll get to the raccoon, don't you worry.
One day, you'll just have to wait. All right, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Robots Attack. Follow them on Twitter at RobotsAttackMe. Email them at RobotsAttackShow@gmail.com. Like them on Facebook. And check out the website at RobotsAttack.me.
And now, it's time for Caleb's Corner.
Hello. Welcome back to Robots Attack. This is Caleb's Corner. This is the part of the show where I get to opinionate, pontificate, or otherwise talk. And the opinions expressed in this segment are not necessarily those of anyone else here on Robots Attack, and most certainly they are not those of KSCU or any of its parent subsidiary groups, things, and stuff. So
every once in a while we agree with you.
Yeah, if you choose to agree with me, that's your own prerogative. Yeah. I'm just saying it's not necessarily reflective of the views of anyone in the studio or above us. So last week I talked about the leader of the Guardians of the Galaxy, who is known as Star-Lord, and his human name is Peter Quill.
Is that your opinion?
My opinion?
I'm sorry.
I don't know. Is it my opinion that he's declared as leader of the Guardians of the Galaxy? Anyways, today I'm talking again to bring up one of the other team members known as Drax the Destroyer. I could give you his bigger backstory origin, but that really doesn't reflect very well on the persona you will see on film, so I'm not going to go with that.
Oh, come on. Cliff Notes, at least.
He was a being created to take out Thanos.
That's pretty good.
Yes. His original form was something that could stand up to the Hulk. Not necessarily take him, but stand up to the Hulk. And he could fly, shoot energy, and was super strong.
Well, then he's just showing off.
Yeah, but kind of. He was created by a being known as Kronos to help defend the universe against Thanos. Thanos will be, if the name Thanos is tingling your geek senses, I will talk more about Thanos at some point, but right now just know that he's one of the big bad characters of Marvel Universe. But Drax, as he is now, is not quite that creature. In his most current incarnation, which was described in the Guardians of the Galaxy that kind of led up to this in around 2008, this kind of relaunched the character and again, and then more recently with Marvel Now, they have actually made it the one that they're kind of going with for the film.
Okay.
But those two are very closely related, so we'll start there. His story basically begins in a prison transport that crashes in Alaska. He befriends and protects a young girl named Cammy, and while he's fighting the other inmates, because it's a, you know, violent criminals transport apparently.
Oh, okay.
So it's
I thought you were gonna say the violent criminal island, like Australia or ye olden year.
And it's not the Street Fighter character, Cammy.
No, it is not the Street Fighter character. Yes, this one will probably be an alien of some sort, although she'll look very human.
Okay.
In the stories.
So no pigtails?
I don't think so.
Okay. I'm just trying to paint a picture.
From what I remember from seeing some of the pictures, like he was in, like the bulkier form of himself, more like the old original style character who was sort of looked like he was on roids for quite some time.
Perhaps this will help the audience who's playing him in the new Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
Sure. In the new Guardians of the Galaxy, he'll be played by Dave Bautista, who is a wrestler at the WWE.
There you go.
So he is a big guy, but he's fairly compact overall. And that's what during the fight afterwards, he like his big form is like killed. There's a slightly tell, but then like the skinny lither version pops out of the shell. So it's sort of this weird like kind of metamorphosis that happens in that wonderful world of comics where
anything goes.
Yep, we're just gonna write this in. So
that's
not that it's uncool or not that it doesn't make sense. It's just sort of it's kind of a Deus Ex Machina because they're telling a story. Anyway, so this particular version, since the versions of Drax the Destroyer have decreased in size, the mental capacity has increased.
Okay.
Depending on like which particular
part
of the timeline.
How many times does this happen now?
He's been around for a little while. So, there was a period of time where his mind was completely taken over by several other beings. Well, that's all.
That happens to everybody in Marvel. So
yeah, at least once.
It happened to me. I mean,
so the abilities that he has are sort of, they're unfortunately not very exemplary. He's got improved speed, senses, and strength, and he's also more durable than, you know, an average creature. You know.
So far I'm hearing like Sherlock Holmes or something like that.
No, he's bigger than Sherlock Holmes.
What about a bread box?
Definitely bigger than a bread box.
Okay.
He's not like a high intellect, but he now has a mind for strategy as opposed to smash.
Okay. So Dr. Watson then.
I guess that's more along the lines, but he's still bigger than that. He's still like physically more impressive than that.
Okay.
His kind of kicker ability, near as I can tell, is that he can pass through Thanos' force field, even if it's for a brief moment.
Mm.
And Thanos is like Silver Surfer and some of those other creatures. He can touch the power cosmic, which is essentially the power of the universe. He can funnel a significant portion of that through himself. So
he has a 0-point module,
something like that.
And that's handy because, like you mentioned, he was made
to fight Thanos.
So wait, he still was made for that, or is that?
That part, near as I can
unclear.
Tell, in the comics, is in his current version, is unclear whether he was designed to do that or not. Very first version of his character.
He was. Okay.
And it sounds like
he's... aren't you glad I asked for the cliff notes?
Yeah, see?
And I think he still sort of like... he's not now like a direct counterpoint as much as he was before, but now he's like this... With enough people around him and stuff, he could probably take out Thanos, possibly.
Okay.
Or at least give him something to be scared of.
So if Wolverine tosses him.
Yep. Possibly.
Got it.
His character as a solo character has unfortunately been sort of underwhelming. Like, he hasn't like really been really well developed by anybody yet. He's like, he's had a couple of attempts at solo story arcs, and they just haven't gone very far.
Okay.
Which in some ways like kind of reminds me of, it's sort of like the Kratos problem. Not that Kratos is a bad character, but there's just only so much you can do with a character driven by rage. And
he's a horrible character. I'm going to go with that.
Which is not to say that Drax the Destroyer is driven by rage, but it's there's a certain lack of dimension to his character so far. Now, the movie may be an opportunity for that to change, which would be cool. It would also be interesting to see how Mr. Bautista handles that, being he's not a trained actor. He's a wrestler, which means he has a high charisma, but he's not necessarily like a well-honed figure in terms of his acting ability. Okay. So we'll see how that goes.
I keep wanting to call him Mr. San Juan.
I think he was in the latest Riddick movie. I think so. I know he's been in a few things.
Yeah, he's been. Okay. He has been in a couple movies.
But yeah, he's
not like The Rock or Michael Clarke Duncan, where it's like acting first and then size, as opposed to size then acting. So yeah, that's kind of the cliff notes on him. He's
okay. He's not your favorite Guardians of the Galaxy character, I'm taking it.
No,
this is why you didn't save him for last.
Yeah. And it's not, and like I said, it's not that he's bad, there's not as much to say about him. He's a solid fighter, he's a solid strategist, but he's not overwhelmingly good at any one of those to where he outshines somebody else in some other way, and they haven't really done much with his personality per se. So
is there any other like sci-fi pop culture character that you can kind of compare him to? Or I mean, not just on a physical like abilities, but like what he's like,
or maybe like a couple characters if you combined them,
right,
or something, or
if one was peanut butter and one was jelly.
Yeah, near as I can
and
tell,
together they form sandwich.
Near as I can tell, the
Captain Planet.
Huh? Does he have a mullet?
No, he does not have a mullet. He's
is he blue?
No, his head is clear, as in it's no hair.
Oh. You can see through his head?
No, that'd be somebody else. But I guess the closest character that you could probably compare him to is probably Riddick, because he's like, you know,
I was sort of feeling that
criminal past, mostly not like so exceptionally beyond abilities that we would expect, but still better than what you would still much higher than average. And you know, in this particular version, like, he's a little bit more keen to use knives as his primary weapon. So it's a little, I think that when they started reworking this, they were going for something more of a Riddick vibe. So that's probably the closest. And it's also, and even character wise, like, there's a certain, you see him like, oh, that's, you can kind of get a similar, you know,
but
vibration.
Not ridiculous.
Not ridiculous. And he was in the movie, the latest Riddick, and he was also in Man with the Iron Fists.
Oh, yeah. Sweet.
So.
I shouldn't say that. It's a horrible movie that I love. So.
Yeah, that's right. He was the guy that could turn.
Oh, okay. Yeah. The golem turn, dude.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. All right. Well,
so, there you go.
We look forward to the next.
Mm-hmm.
Character you highlight on next week's. Do you want to tease, or do you not sure
what type
yet
of
which
rodent
one
is the next character?
it's not the raccoon yet. There's gonna be one in between, and then I think I'll do the tree next.
Ooh.
Wait, there's a tree.
Maybe
you'll be a tree.
You'll just have to wait and listen.
Yep.
Oh,
come back next week and you'll find out.
Yeah.
What kind of movie is this?
But if you missed, like, if you missed part one on Star-Lord, how could they go and listen?
If you missed part one, you can go back and find the episode on robotsattack.me. That has all the archived episodes of our show. And that will also have our my quick introduction to Star-Lord there as well.
Yep.
There you go. We're getting you ready for Guardians of the Galaxy, which is coming out.
Mm-hmm.
This summer.
A GOG primer.
Speaking of things that are coming out before summer.
Yes.
There's the 26th Annual Russian Festival. Enjoy live entertainment at the 26th Annual Russian Festival, a celebration of Russian-American food, dance, music, and art. Explore the Museum of Russian Culture as well as a local art gallery and bazaar of Russian gifts and crafts. The festival will be held on Friday, February 21st through Sunday, February 23rd at the Russian Center of San Francisco on 2460 Sutter Street in San Francisco. For more information on tickets and festival hours, visit RussianCenterSF.com. All right. Before we get to our music break, I'd feel remiss if we didn't mention this. Sadly, I believe it was Sunday, we lost a good actor.
We did indeed.
To
one of my absolute favorites, actually.
It's very, very sad to learn that he had an addiction to heroin, I believe it was.
Yes.
And that was the cause of death, and it's just sad to lose Philip Seymour Hoffman, and so we reach out to his family and all those. May he rest in peace, and just, yeah, that's... When I woke up and like looked and stuff, you know, was, most of the stuff was like, you know, Super Bowl news and everything like that. And then I see that and like, wait, what? This can't be real. This isn't.
What threw me off about it is I saw it as like George Takei's Facebook feed. And I mean, it was jarring news and I select it, but it was a dead link. And so I was trying to figure out. So is it something wrong or whatnot? And then that's when I looked it up and like 30 different articles came up. So sad, tragic ending.
Yes. So maybe go watch your favorite Philip Seymour Hoffman. If you're not familiar with him, go check out some of his work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know if he...
As soon as I get a chance, I'm going to watch Charlie Wilson's War. It's one of my favorite characters in that.
Yeah, I'd forgot. He was in that until they mentioned it. I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, he was good.
Yeah.
The part where he kept
one of the
going
best CIA agents ever.
but yeah, go watch some Hoffman films. All right. We're going to take a music break and then come back with the core where we're going to discuss game mechanics. Maybe actual mechanics in video games.
That's what I'm talking about. You guys could catch up.
Or actual game mechanics of games. Think about it.
Mm-hmm. And how they affect each other.
All right. You're listening to Robots Attack, one and only Geek Central talk show here on KCU Santa Clara 103.3 FM, The Underground Sound. We'll be right back with more.
You are now entering the core. Say.
Radio time. Are you interested in free radio time? KCU loves to broadcast announcements about local nonprofits and government agencies. Email traffic at KCU.org with information on services or upcoming events, and we will consider making an announcement for your organization. All right, welcome back to Robots Attack here on KCU Santa Clara 103.3 FM, The Underground Sound. We're in the core, and we're talking about game mechanics. Maybe we'll throw in some plumbers. Maybe.
Perhaps, listener.
If people ask nicely.
But I don't really know of any, so...
What?
Liar! I think...
I can't think of... Yeah, who...
Zelda, right? Wasn't there a plumber?
Something about that.
Zelda
yeah.
or something like that.
An ocarina is a plumbing tool of some sort, right?
I believe so.
I think so.
Right.
Yeah, that sounds right. Okay.
It sounds legit.
So... As I mentioned earlier in the show, and I'm mentioning again right now, we're going to talk about game mechanics.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
We a slight spoiler. We here are actually going to be trying to make our own game, and we're trying to kind of do some research and figure things out. And one of the things that I suggested was, why don't we talk about some of the game mechanics of games, mm-hmm. be they board game, be they card game, be they video game.
Right, right.
That we like.
Yeah.
And maybe even reach out to the audience.
The ones that we hate aren't so useful when we want to create something that we like.
Exactly. But reach out to the audience and the listeners out there. Let us know some game mechanics and things of games that you like to play. What about them do you like?
Yeah.
You know, and definitely let us know. Hit us up on Facebook, tweet us the things that you like about the games you like to play with your friends, mm-hmm. by yourself.
Yeah.
All those things. So I want to open it up, Caleb.
Yeah.
Come out of your corner.
Come out of the corner.
One of my personal favorites it seems like it's been, I'm sure there are games that did this before, but it seems to be a rising trend is the cooperative game where it's all the players against the game, okay. which is kind of nice because like most games that we're familiar with are like players against the players. It's like, you know, you get Monopoly, you got to buy all the property, drive mm-hmm. everyone else into bankruptcy, own everything, and so on and so forth. But like, there's a card game that I got introduced to called Guardians of the Multiverse.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And it's like a deck building game, but not each you have different groups of characters, and like you create a team of superheroes which is all the players, and then there's a main villain
they fight.
Yeah, all the heroes go against the villain, and the villains have special abilities and things like that. So
somebody play the villain, or
the villains have their own rules for what they do they have a turn, and then you know the card describes what they do. Their card describes what they do. So, but it's just kind of fun, like everyone looking at their hands, at their cards, at where their teammates stand. It's like, okay, you have that and you have that. I have this, which would boost both of those. So I will do this on this right now, draw this card to do this thing. And that means that both of you guys can now do twice the damage or extra point of damage than you would have done a moment ago,
okay.
which takes, and then the villain down one more step down their track or whatever.
So it lets you work with your friends as opposed to against them.
Yes. And then, not that I'm against like playing competitively, but it's nice when not every single game you can opt to play is I got to go against my friends. That's the end of that all the time. So it's nice to see this trend of like making the cooperation and the team mm-hmm. an essential part of the game.
Right. Yeah, it's nice that that's becoming a bigger trend in the more, like, outside of video games sort of games. It's one of the few instances where I think it's become like a... Video games have been the bleeding edge and have been bleeding into something that's been around a lot longer than video games. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a cool backwards osmosis in a weird sort of way. But yeah, I one of the things that I'd mentioned with the same group of guys once before is that one of my favorite elements that I've come across in any sort of like gathering around the table sort of game is actually a card game, one that's been defunct for quite a while, but I still love with a passion, called 7C.
Mm-hmm.
And it had basically sword fighting as kind of the big thing, and depending on who you ask, it was either sword fighting or just shooting each other was mm-hmm. the main idea of the game.
You played pirates for those who aren't familiar with the game.
Yes, so. High seas, high adventure pirates.
Yeah,
right. But the swashbuckling swordsman stuff could be really maddening, but it was such a satisfying twist compared to everything else. It was sort of like a more grown-up game of like war. You're throwing down different cards of the deck. It felt like there was strategy involved in something really simple, and it ended up really making a nice element for when you're building a deck. So to me, I'd love to get something like that into a game that doesn't require you to build up the deck separately. I'd like that to exist there, that people can actually draw from it without having to build away from all of your friends, you know?
Because in 7C, like, it used, just so the audience can kind of get
it, was rock,
picture.
Paper, scissors, sort of.
Yeah. It was just like, it was on the cards in your hand.
Yeah.
Had these
Right.
Like little squares.
Yeah, like there's the art, there's the stats of the character, and then along the left-hand edge on the lower third, there was three different initials that stood for different types of attacks.
Yeah, like thrust or something.
And parry.
Like, and you had to, like...
Slash.
Yeah. That was it.
And you had to I sort of remember it, and I don't remember.
Yeah, you'd match one, and it would end up, one of them was stood out from the other three, and it was what the new was going to
be. The other three that were lower, one of those had to match, right?
The previous... one of two has to match, and then the larger one is the new attack.
That's right.
And so it ended up creating a nice picture in your head, at least, because they were like slashes and thrusts and whatnot.
Yeah.
It made a really cool scene. It could get maddening because it could like never stop.
Yeah.
And it could completely reverse what you'd expect to be a really awesome swordsman would get at least nullified by somebody who had never picked up a sword in their life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of what was awesome about
it,
too.
Yeah, there's this sort of that gamble to it. Plus, it was a strategy in a sense that you used your hand, and a lot of times you're like, okay, you're kind of building up like, all right, I'm going to throw this card down when I get this, or I'm saving this for this. And now you're in this situation where, oh, great, I got to use these cards if I want to keep this person alive this. And so
it works against your everything that you've built in your mind as being a card game, like you hoarding these cards for the perfect moment. You have to make that choice, which is really deadly. And what a lot of people don't like about that side of the fighting was getting rid of a potentially like really important card because you don't want a character to die. But again, I think that was the genius of it too.
Yeah.
It added a sense of danger to the situation that normally wouldn't be there. It's like, you know, because like you'd have this, you think, oh, you know, the strategy is I lay down the cards, but in this case it's, the card doesn't actually do what it was intended to do. It's now has to do this other thing, which is really, which is like kind of a funky thing. Like, and also, if you build a deck that's weighted to a certain type of game style, like if you were, you know, the Crimson Rogers and you were all cannons, right, and all of a sudden, like all these cannoning cards are now kind of being used as the thing they were never intended to be, so to speak. Yeah. So. Yeah.
Which is the best part about it, too. Like, if you can pull somebody out of their comfort zone. So,
yeah.
That was cool. But I really liked, too, that by you using those in potentially important cards, it created an even more rich scene. It wasn't just you, like, trading a slash and, like, pairing it with a thrust or whatnot. It was potentially you, like, using the random stuff that's peppered around the ship that maybe you haven't installed yet or whatnot, like you entangling somebody's hands in the hammocks and it ruins the hammocks, which you were really looking forward to using,
but
you saved the character and so on.
So figuring out sort of a way to infuse that element, maybe streamline it in a sense, but just having like what, The that sort of combat, that's kind of what you're...
At least the option of it, that would really appeal to me in some sort of game.
You like the idea of sort of of giving cards more than just the purpose that's printed on them, per se.
I like it from just about every angle, to be honest. I really like that it's hectic also. Like,
yeah.
I know it's weird to compare like a card game to Devil May Cry, but to me it's a lot the same sort of thing. It's this incredibly fast-paced fighting, but in order to do it right, you actually have to have a little bit of a strategy like laid out in your head of what you're trying to do. And you could possibly like put together a strategy with just these random cards in your hands by forcing somebody to like starve out all of their thrusting, like maybe they tire out their sword arm or something like that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, very cool.
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed that element of that game. And now I'm going to actually kind of play off of that game, 7C.
Fair enough.
And Magic the Gathering. And what I like is the idea of being able to personalize.
Okay.
So, like with 7C, you played a pirate faction.
Right, right.
I liked that element that everybody sort of had a bunch of these different groups that they could choose from. And a lot of them were, you know, you had your classic quote-unquote sort of evil pirates.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then you had your classic sort of like Han Solo-ish.
Do-gooders.
Yeah, kind of, you know, kind of pirates. And then there were just a mix of all these other different groups that you could choose from.
Uptight Frenchmen.
Yeah. But but yeah, I liked that element that you could build a deck. You could choose a group that you liked the characters or you liked the style, and you could make it your own.
Mm-hmm.
And Magic had a sort of similar way as far as with the different colors that you could choose
That's
from.
True.
You know,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I liked that, you know, like I'm a big fan of the white cards. I liked the angels and that sort of thing. So, and the soldiers that they came with, all that sort of thing. So it was fun to like, ooh, okay, I'm going to build this like soldier deck or angel deck. And like
have a fun theme to it.
Yeah, yeah, just have your own sort of personal theme. And someone else could be using white cards also, or another same group, but it could be completely different.
Oh, yeah.
They could, you know, that's, I always like a game that lets you sort of have your own little personal piece of it and make it your own.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I would... In the game that I hope we can put together, that's something that I would like, an element I would like to infuse in it that, you know, even if it was something that we all were, it was a co-op, we could still have our own, you know, separate things. I mean, like, look at like Borderlands 2, which was mentioned, you know, there's those different characters.
Right.
Like, you could pick, you know, one, be like, oh, I really like this person's style and this, you know, the abilities that they have.
And there's a build up.
Yeah, but sort of playing off with Borderlands 2, someone else, like in another game, could play that same character, but go down a whole different skill tree and change it up completely. Like
yeah, or they choose to focus on a different set of guns, like they like the SMGs for whatever reason, or the pistols, and it's like, you know.
Yeah, and that extends down items, like, everywhere you can think of, too. I mean, you have shields that do drastically different things as well. And if you take it out of that game, I mean, there's tons and tons of games that literally suit up the character. And I've always thought that's kind of a fun element in, especially when they figure out how to do it well in card games, which brings me back to the 7C. It was sort of fun, like, giving your character a peg leg and finding out, like, ways that would actually be a good thing.
yeah.
And it's good that my character lost a leg.
Yeah, because it prevented him from actually completely dying,
right,
or did this, or,
exactly,
you know, gave him this ability. And in Magic, they started doing that as well with the actual artifacts. Like, you could, and, you know, they ended up in it, so you could actually equip the creatures and characters that you put out with them and, you know, swap in and out. And that was a cool thing, too, when they started doing that kind of personalized, like, okay, this guy, I'm going to give him this really cool sword. And
yeah, it's funny. Like, I know Magic has had its different resurges at different points, and it's always been one of those games where I really kind of want to play it again, but I cannot afford it.
Yeah, that's why I stick with the virtual versions of it on
360.
On 360, yeah.
Yeah.
They help me scratch that itch whenever I feel like, I feel like playing some Magic. I'm going to turn this on and play it. Yeah, that was good.
Mm-hmm. Didn't have to buy any cards. Awesome.
Right, yeah.
Although, I mean, in all honesty, I do, like, miss that. Like, that is always fun.
The thrill of getting the booster. Yeah. It's like, oh, what's in it?
Yeah. But yeah, like Jason said.
It's a weird mental drug is what it is. It's a definite addiction of some sort or another.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, that's an element, a game mechanic,
definitely,
that I enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why do you find that funny, Jason?
You're
laughing at my.
No, I was trying to figure out whether I was gonna incorporate Isaac Clarke in here someplace.
Well, before you possibly or not possibly throw them in.
Okay.
I can tell you about San Jose Animal Advocates again. If you're an animal lover who wants to help homeless animals find their forever homes but have limited time to volunteer, you can join San Jose Animal Advocates, a local nonprofit that is building a community network to help find loving, foster, and forever homes for pets in our local shelters. With your help, we can save countless animals. All it takes is a few clicks, and you can share their stories with your network of friends. It's easy. Join them at sjanimaladvocates.org or look for them on Facebook. Right.
And we can neither confirm nor deny that Benedict Cumberbatch is a fan of that service. So
it's true.
We're not allowed
to
say one way or another. We've been restricted by Mr. Cumberbatch. He sent us an email. Mm-hmm. Okay, maybe he didn't.
He may or may not
have. May or may not have.
Confirm or deny said Cumberbatching.
Right.
Mm-hmm. A
Cumberbatch of emails.
One of our listeners has chimed in and said one of the things they really like about games is mm-hmm. side quests. Optional extras that you can do that may not necessarily, you know, that can be just fun within another game or what have you.
Mm-hmm. It's so weird. Like, a lot of this stuff perfectly fits into 7C. Like, the side quests was effectively the adventures side of that. Man, it's just painful that game died.
Yeah.
So well-rounded.
I wish there was a virtual version.
It's
to play. Mm-hmm. That would be cool.
Caleb, make it for us.
I think we'd have to get permission to do that.
No.
That's what we'll make.
We can neither confirm or deny that this is based
on. We'll just call it 6C.
Seventh guest.
That one's at the rate.
It'll have 6 C's instead of 7. Right. And
14 C's. Twice the C's.
So many more C's in your brain has room for.
But yeah, side quests are always mm-hmm. fun. Usually, you know, it's a good way to get, I mean, as far as like in the terms of video games, a lot of times, you know, it'll be the way you'll get a new outfit or mm-hmm. a new artifact or something like that.
A new head.
Yeah.
a new class customization or something like that, you know?
Yeah. You know, I'm trying to think. Yeah, it's okay. So 7C had like the adventures. So those mm-hmm. were. Yeah, I'm trying to think if I've encountered anything, because it's like magic. There isn't really.
Nah, the Star Trek game had it. The Star Wars one sort of did a thing like that, because you had the three different. Not really, because when WotC took it over, they sort of.
Yeah, it was
simplified
like
it a lot.
Space character and land. There was no.
Okay.
Yeah, so it wasn't really side quests as much as different arenas. Yeah, I think like 7C was one of the last like card games that I knew of that had like a side quest element to it. Like even Guardians of the Multiverse, like it's still like there's
you just focus on the
yeah like there's different ways of focusing on the villain, but that's like the singular thing you do. It's a comic book fight where it's like. This thing showed up. Let's get it. So.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Sorry. One of the kind of game elements I like, which is sort of like almost the flip side of my first one, which is cooperation, is what I call shared competition, and the game that I think of is Cards Against Humanity. Where there's
okay,
where it's like there is a competition amongst the players, but the competition's to make the person the judge laugh. So it's like we're all in on the joke, so to speak. So
the competition is fun.
Yeah, it's not like ha! I have now messed up your strategy. Everything you've done is now moot. It's like hey, we're all in it for a good laugh, and it's. Competitive with
that's my strategy when I play that game. I try and make your strategies moot, but and it works.
Moo. When you can do it like that, also where it's like there's where it's you're still pitted against each other, but it's not a vindictive thing.
It's not a deep, dark pit.
Mm-hmm. It's a playful punch.
It's well,
the sh-
it's well lit.
Yeah, it's a playful punch in the shoulder as opposed to, like, you know, a brawl in an alley, you know. It's,
yeah, because I know they have, I mean, some names are escaping me, but I know they'll have games where you do sort of work with the other players, but, I mean, you are, like, trying to win, but mm-hmm. you can, like, help each other, but...
You can make a temporary alliance to... Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, people sort of do that in, what, like, Risk or sort of games like that. Like, okay, I'm not going to attack you, but mm-hmm. we'll just team up to take out this person or something, but... I want to say there's other games
which
where you actually...
Which always angers the odd man out.
Yeah. But I want to say there's other games that actually, like, you're not really, like, on the down low. It's just like, okay, you're like, you can help the other players, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, you are still trying to...
To beat them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, would you... So, would you prefer... It be strictly like cooperative, like all the players are working together to take on something, or would you want it to be the second one that you mentioned where one of the players does actually win, but you can kind of help each other, or do you have one that you...
I weight cooperation higher than shared competition, but it's like, It is a dynamic which I find really interesting because it's still everyone has fun and if I was to make a game I would make one that would focus on trying to bring all the players together to accomplish a common goal of some sort or another.
Okay.
Another thing about that example that I thought of that, which was, I thought was really interesting, is...
He's just hogging all of it.
I know.
Jeez.
It's called...
What if we have ideas?
Arkham Horror. And in that, you play a group of detective people, like thing. A group of people that are trying to survive and stop the...
Cthulhu.
The
amongst the others.
the incursion of the ancient ones of the Cthulhu demons and Lovecraftian creatures. So it's that's another kind of like really interesting use of like the idea of a cooperative game, players versus the game itself kind of thing.
It's true, yeah. It does give sort of opportunities to be against each other in a weird sort of way, but it ends up feeling very communal, especially since it almost encourages you to break the rules, like sharing things that aren't necessarily meant to be shared. And like, well, you'd loan me this in order to beat the doom of all infinity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, of course. Here, take my Tommy gun. I mean,
yeah. That's another one I thought of, though. That's like, it's an interesting twist on the idea.
Mm, okay. No, Jason has someone.
Do I?
Yeah.
No, I'm interested to see what the next thing that Caleb has to talk about is. I know he has more.
Well, my last one is the idea of storytelling. And that's a little more a part of like dice and paper RPGs typically.
Right.
But you guys like picked up on one of the... On this also in Seventh Sea. Like Seventh Sea, like I know we've mentioned that a lot in this, but like the people that designed that game, they put a lot of thought into it, and it shows because it comes up a lot in this in our discussion here. But one of the things that it does is you really start to build a story out of the scenario. It's like
mm-hmm.
yeah.
you know you see the ships passing, like you can kind of they know of an adventure or a side quest, if you will, in on a certain area, so they go look for it and try to improve themselves so they can go take out that other ship from
right,
the other
yeah.
And then the fighting, like, you know, in the cards themselves, like they help you tell the story of what's going on, which helps you understand the world, and then your brain just starts, you know, constructing this larger narrative around what is effectively a couple hours of gameplay.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting too. Like you mentioned the Arkham game, and it has sort of neat mechanics for how creatures wander around. It seems like there's some opportunity there to have something that it would still be a community-based game, kind of similar to 7C or whatnot, but it wouldn't necessarily be outright against each other. It would be kind of neat if you literally had the choice of trying to do a game where it's against a main foe versus where you're just all out attacking each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you'd have to figure out sort of a balance of like, okay, why would it be beneficial like attacking the other players?
Well,
you know what I mean? Or
I don't know if it would be like an agreement at the beginning of the game, like, okay, we're playing it this way this time, or okay. What. But so it might make kind of an interesting thing, like, oh, twist in the story, I'm gonna stab all of your backs or something. but yeah, it in order to not lose friends, it would probably be better to agree at the beginning of the game how it's going to be played.
Or have a mechanic within the game that says, okay, well, we've now turned into the game is now twisted into a new direction.
I know there are there's board games out there that kind of run off of that, where you don't necessarily know who the good guys and bad guys are. There's apparently a really good game about the search for Jack the Ripper. And one of the people at the table is Jack the Ripper, and you don't know who it is.
Oh, okay.
And so it ends up being a kind of interesting thing of you positioning your pieces around and trying to find somebody and create the look of trying to find somebody while accomplishing your goals of doing murderous activities.
Mm-hmm.
And so it sounded like a really interesting game mechanic.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool.
So, yeah, and it could also sort of play up how we mentioned, you know, having the cards serving different cards or whatever, having multiple uses. So, like you said, if you did design the game where, okay, everyone could be working together, or they could also work as everyone's against each other.
Mm-hmm.
So it could kind of, like you said, change up, add some more replayability to the game because it's... It can be
it's two games in one.
Or more.
Right.
Yeah. All right. I think we've thrown out some good ideas out there.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you to the listeners who have participated. Mm-hmm. And we'd also like to hear, if you have any more, hit us up. How can they do that, Caleb?
Well, you can find us on Facebook. Do a search for Robots Attack, two words, and you'll find our Facebook page. Or you can find us on Twitter. Our handle is Robots Attack Me, all one word. Or you can email us, robotsattackshow@gmail.com. But if you want just one place, one address to remember, robotsattack.me. We have archive episodes of our show there, and as well as ways to communicate with us through there. So that is the one place to rule them all for communicating with us.
Yes. All right. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next Thursday from 7 to 9. Coming up next, the Pre-Funk Show. Stick around for some great music. Thanks again for listening. Have a wonderful weekend. Take it easy.
Raccoon. Veronica. Mistone.